ladies and gentlemen, friends and rivals. My name is Jared, and with me is my frozen friend, Ian.
That's me.
We will be your hosts for the episode. We are honored and grateful that you have joined us at the feature table. Here at the Game Table Podcast, we take a look at various board, card, and other tabletop games. We give an overview, provide a little insight on how to play, and share some of our thoughts, all in an attempt to give you an idea of how well it would fit for you and your table. Today, we will be looking at Nunatak, Temple of Ice, designed by Kane Klenko, artwork created by Quanchai Maria, and published by Cosmos.
Nunatak is a 1-4 player, three-dimensional pyramid building game where players use different types of journeymen from their region to build a magnificent ice temple. Players will use these different workers strategically in order to claim areas of the temple and score points. When the temple is completed, the player who contributed the most to this glorious temple will be crowned the winner. And they'll be crowned with an ice crown. A nice ice crown. Let's review Nunatak.
Crushed it.
Cold. It is cold outside here, ladies and gentlemen.
As we record this on January 10th, Nashville, Tennessee has shut down.
It is frozen tundra.
We are in a state of emergency as a whole 6 inches of snow has fallen.
Maybe less, but we'll say 6.
I can assure you all of the milk and the bread and the eggs are gone.
Yep.
Everyone is at home making French toast as they should. And that's where we're at.
And the black beans. I couldn't find a single can of black beans.
Wow.
So I don't know I don't know why. Are there, so I don't know who's making chili, which is black beans, but...
Maybe it's not chili. Maybe they all wanted tacos on their frozen tundra evening. They
couldn't find a single can.
I've never heard of that.
Please, comment and tell me, please. What did you make with all these black beans you bought? Because I couldn't find a single can that I needed. I was actually making something. I don't know what everybody else was doing.
You know what, Ian? You're right. Nobody else was making anything with these black beans.
They just bought them. You just bought them up. I was had a recipe that we planned all week long. We go to the store to pick up black beans. They're not there. I don't know what everybody else was making. So please tell me what you made. Because I don't know. I don't know who bought only black beans.
Forget Nunatak. We have to have a counseling session right here about your missing black beans.
Yes. But regardless, yeah, there's snow. Build your icemen, your ice temples. I didn't build an ice temple today. Did you build an ice temple?
My kids built a snowman that's as tall as I am.
Wow. That's pretty
I was very impressed.
That's pretty good.
Yep.
So anyway, Jared, do you know what a Nunatak is?
Oh, thank you for asking. I do know what a Nunatak is.
Well, tell me.
So Nunataks are mountain peaks that rise above glaciers. They are surrounded by glaciers on all sides. You can find them in polar regions and high altitude areas such as Antarctica, Greenland, the Himalayas, Andes, and the Rocky Mountains.
There you go.
And it comes from the... I'm not going to say this word correctly, so I apologize. It comes from the Inuit word lonely peak.
Makes sense. I just imagine, like, I don't know, it's kind of weird. It's because you'll see pictures. So obviously the ones that are like really tall, but there's also the ones that are like, you're like walking on like 100 feet of snow. And then there's like this little rock, but that's really just a mountaintop.
It's the top of a mountain.
That's funny.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah, crazy.
I don't know when you have done that, when you have walked on 100 feet of snow and walked next to a mountain, but you know, like you do.
Well, yeah.
Great. So speaking of walking on 100 feet of snow, Ian, what's the coldest place you've ever been?
I will say, I don't think this is it's not considered a Nunatak, but it was. So we're out in the mountains, out in Roan Mountain, which is very... East Tennessee, into the mountain region there, and you climb on top of one of the highest points. It's on the Appalachian Trail, and it's actually one of the highest points on the Appalachian. We always hit this place up in January, February time, so it's always very cold.
Yep.
And there is, like, I'd say 100 feet. There's not 100 feet, but there are swells of 25, 30 feet of snow. And it's quite crazy, but the pictures are absolutely gorgeous. And I know I've mentioned this place before, but I do remember one day we're up there because we did go frequently. It's been a couple years now, but this one year we're up there, and I think there's no cell service there, so I don't carry a thermometer on me at all times. I don't know if you do, but
I do actually. Okay. Thank you for asking.
Oh, good. Yeah, I don't. So I'm a novice when it comes to these ice temples, but I do know the temp for that day, probably in the mid teens. And then that's on, like, down in the low valley. So we climb up to the mountain and we're hiking, and it's absolutely cold. It is so cold. And I think somebody was able to tell me, we're, like, walking by, and they just, like, randomly say, yeah, like, the wind chill's like negative 28. And I'm like, yeah, at this point, if it's anywhere below zero at this point, I mean, my face is about to freeze off. So that was definitely one of the coldest. It was with the wind blowing, and you're up on the mountain. Obviously, the wind's, like, you know, swirling up there. It was so cold. I had, like, 18 layers. It didn't matter. My cheeks were just frozen off. Like, it was crazy. It's the wind that obviously makes it really,
if it's
15, 20 degrees, that's obviously cold.
It's terrible. I even went walking the other night, and there's this particular part of our neighborhood where the wind just kind of funnels through, and it hit just right. And I'm like, it feels like I'm not even wearing clothes right now as the wind just shoots blades into my body.
Awful.
Of coldness. Yeah. It's just the best feeling ever.
Yeah. I love that. Well, we're building ice temples. So, yeah. So Jared, please tell us how to stay warm inside this temple. And how do we do that?
I'm not going to tell you how to stay warm, but I will tell you how to win this game.
Okay.
So the goal of this game is to have the most points. You are in this ancient civilization that's building one of these temples of ice. And we are going to go on a little journey here with a variety of different workers and different tools that are needed to be able to build these things as we prepare for the harshness of winter. There are, in fact, a variety of different ways to score, as all the players at the table are building one Noon Attack. But obviously you're playing for yourselves. And so think of it like building an ice temple pyramid together, but you're not really working together. Each player is given 18 ice blocks of their color and a few scoring markers to keep track of your overall score, as well as your architect level. In the middle of the table, a square frame is built to make the score track, and inside this frame is a 5x5 grid of all the level 1 floor tiles. These are shuffled and will be different from game to game, so you'll just shuffle those up, deal them out, make that grid, and you've got your starting floor. These tiles each house one of the 6 different symbols, which you will determine where you can go on your turn and the different scoring methods that you can be working towards during your turn and throughout the game. Additionally, there is a deck of building cards that each have a matching symbol with the different icons on the floor tiles. So there are always going to be 4 of these cards face up throughout the game, and these 4 cards are what you get to select from to determine where you're going to place your ice block for that round. On a player's turn, they select one of the 4 face-up building cards and place it in front of them to start their collection of cards. Then they take one of their ice blocks and move it over to one of the floor tiles that match the card that was chosen. So if I have a builder card that I have placed in front of me, I can only place on builder tiles. And this will be very easily identified. And there is not a builder tile available. You cannot take the builder card because you must have both to be able to make it work. Each turn, you will add 1 card to your collection, which will increase your scoring potential. So the cards that you select, you're going to put in front of you and they're going to stay there. And you kind of collect them as sets, depending on the different kind of scoring that you're going to be going for. So the six different symbols identify as builders, and whoever has the most builders at the end of the game gets 20 points, and everyone else gets 2 points per builder. They also have an added bonus of letting you manipulate the board by moving around certain floor tiles when you select a builder card. Sculptors, basically the way they work, the more you have, the higher the total point value of that particular group. Next are artisans. They want to collect sets of a secondary symbol which only show up on these cards, and those secondary symbols are ropes, pickaxes, and pole saws. Then we have the Beasts of Burden. You want as many of these as possible because the more icons you have, the more points you're going to get. Architects utilize the raising of your architect track. And so basically the more architect cards you have and the higher your architect track working together, then you're going to get more points for them. And the way that you raise that architect track is by completing rows of ice blocks. They don't have to all be yours. And so as you're building this temple, there are going to be rows that are going to be created. And so if you're the one to finalize that row, then you get to move on your architect track because you're smarter than everybody else. And then last but not least, we have our elders. They provide blessings and also additional scoring. Blessings are cards that provide additional point scoring opportunities either at the end of the game or during the game itself. Going back to placing ice blocks, once you place an ice block that puts 4 ice blocks, hang with me here, this is a visual thing.
I'm hanging on.
Hang on, Ian, we're gonna get there. Once you place an ice block that puts 4 ice blocks, and again, they don't have to all be yours, next to each other in a square, you place a floor tile on these ice blocks to create the next level. There are bonus points given if you're the one with the most of the ice blocks in this square that you've completed. If you have the most of them, you get 5 points. If someone else has the most, they get 5 points. And then there's also points for second player as well. And then you move on. When you place one of your ice blocks on a secondary level or higher, you will check to see which ice blocks are underneath that particular floor tile. These are easily seen because the way the structure of how the floor tile lays on the ice blocks, so you'll be able to determine which colors are whose pretty easy. And then so if you place one of your ice blocks on that level 2 or higher, you receive 1 point for each of your ice blocks that are directly below the ice block you just placed. Play will continue like this until you reach the top of the temple, at which point the game will end. Points are tallied, and the player with the most points wins. Let's head back over to the table and discuss.
I am so cold.
That makes sense.
From building with ice.
You got to really have the right gloves. If you don't have the right gloves, you're already cooked.
Here's the issue, not to go back to the whole ice, you know, building, but if you want to be detailed, you can't wear these thick gloves because then like how, but then your hands are cold. So like, how
it's
do
a
you
happy
win
medium.
Ever?
Oh, you don't
okay.
win.
Well, I was going to take a look at this, this designer here.
Go for it, man.
Well, the designer here, Kane Klenko, been designing games here for, it looks like 10 plus years. His main success is Fuse, Dead Men Tell No Tales, and Flip Ships.
Man, I remember when Flip Ships came out, it was all the
rage.
Yeah,
Flip Ships did very well. There's also the Pandemic Rapid Response, and then the Flatline, which I believe this looks familiar. But anyway, so some solid design, good work, and has done obviously tons of stuff in between then. And has worked with many different game companies. So, always exciting. And then this is Cosmos. As far as Cosmos, I mean, I guess I haven't, I mean, I know what I've been following Cosmos for a long time. I don't know if I can tell you a Cosmos game that's recently come out. It's like, oh, that's a Cosmos game. And then my brain just forgets about it. So
dang, way to really, that's great.
Well, not,
I'll help you out.
Thank you.
Here we go. So they do The Crew, both Quest for Planet 9 and Mission Deep Sea.
Okay, there you go.
They did Targi, which is big time. My City. They've got lots of games, man. What are you talking about?
I'm not saying they don't. I'm saying my brain forgets what... I feel like they do a lot of games, so my...
They also do the Exit series.
Okay, see, there you go. So my brain just forgets all of the games they do. I'm not trying to knock them. That's not my point. I'm saying my brain just forgets which games are associated or tied to them. Overall, though, with this design, I think the artwork on it, it fits... I mean, the box art is fantastic. I remember that's the first thing that I ever saw on this game. And then the 3D aspect of it as well.
Yeah, we got pulled in to the 3D aspect at Gen Con. That's where I saw this game first. And I was like, whoa, I need to know what that is. And so we went over and got a demo. I was immediately hooked. I love games where you're not playing together, but you have to work together to kind of build this thing. And negotiating the give and take of, what do I give these guys so that I can score my own points?
Right.
And the ice blocks are nice and chunky. I mean, you get a good sized temple at the end.
Yeah.
And everything's, the thing, and I kind of mentioned this in the how to play portion, but the thing that really draws me in from a component standpoint is because those ice blocks are designed the way they are and they're nice and big and chunky, you can really tell where your color is at all the time. And that makes gameplay so much easier and it makes it a really smooth process, which I really like.
Yeah. And it, like you said, it is a large temple. Like it's weird. You look at the board and it's just like cardboard pieces. And you have your ice blocks, but then they're cardboard. What is that shape? I don't even know.
It's like a square, but it's got pieces or it's got parts carved out of it.
Yeah, parts carved out of it. So it's like a stack of those and then your cubes and you're like, okay, well, I guess at the end there's a temple that we're building. But yeah, no, you like it builds up very, I mean, maybe a foot, maybe less than a foot off the table, but it's still very large. Like it's.
Oh, you're talking about at the beginning where it's just
flat.
It's just
a stack of cardboard on the side over here and then your cubes. But then it becomes this like nice big 3D pyramid. It's very satisfying is throughout the experience of the game. It's just fun to like, okay, like I'm actually contributing to this piece of art.
That's true. Yes. Which is a fun feeling. I like that.
Yeah. No, it's nice. It's very cool.
Yep.
So I guess to do those things, you are drafting-ish, you know, mechanic and taking the different builders or workers and or journeymen, as I like to call them, the journeymen of the temple.
Coined by Ian.
Yeah. So they do a lot of... I always love games where there is a different kind of strategy you can go. And this one has... How many different are there? Is it like eight or...
There's six different types.
Okay, six. It just feels like there's more because I guess you get the little extra abilities as well. But anyway, there's really six different ways that you can go. You're like, you can just sell out all for one on some of them. And just like if you got all of them, you'd score a ton of points. Usually it's better to balance out, obviously. But there is definitely some that you're going to stick a little more to than others. And so I like games that do that. I like games that allow you to kind of adapt to what the table is doing. And let's say there's a lack in this, but an excess in the artisans or whatever. I'm gonna grab that. You guys aren't taking that worker. I'm gonna go for it, and I'm just gonna get all of them.
Yeah.
I like being able to rack to the table and using that to my advantage. Being able to kind of look ahead and say, okay, well, nobody's really taking these, so I think there'll be some more later. Where can I place to set me up for later? These are things that you're kind of running through your head in a very quick manner. Obviously, this game didn't take very long, and your turns are like 2 seconds, but these are things you're thinking about. Okay, what am I going for later here? How am I slowly building up the temple? Because you can't just build on the first level. You got to build up, and I know that building on the second and third level is important because you get a lot of points when you like building on top of something you've already built. So if you're only building on the first level, that only gets you so far. So there's a lot of thinking ahead as far as that goes when taking these different workers, and they all have different abilities and they all do different things too. Like some of them trigger special effects or special rules. And I think that's really cool. Cause look, what's the one that gets the blessings? The
elders, yeah.
Elders, yeah. I mean, those blessing cards are awesome. My only like downside is that there's not more of them. At least the elders, because there's plenty of blessings, but you only play with so many elders. I think it's super cool though.
It's a quick game, right? So like you can only have so many of those to make sure they stay valuable, but that makes them even that much more valuable because you're like, man, if I can pull the right blessing card with the elder, that could be a real game changer.
Yeah, I mean, some of the blessings completely change the scoring for one of the different, all the different types of workers. They give you immediate scoring based on like what you have on the board. I remember playing one of the games. I scored on some of my, I completed a row or an outside edge, and it gave me some extra points. And where I would have only scored like 4, well, I scored like 12. Just all those little changes. There's a lot of variety packed into this little box, and all those cards specifically. You're never gonna see the same setup of cards or the same setup of tiles of your layers.
I do like that, where even the first layer is completely modular. I think that's great.
And I do know as you go up, you have the like the 1, 2, 3 in the stack. So like the mid to late game is gonna be similar, but again, everyone you pull is gonna be different. So the temple is going to be different every time you build it, and the strategy in which you're taking the journeymen are going to be different. So,
yeah.
You'll become a journeyman of yourself by the time you've played all the different games.
That's true. And I do like that there is some strategy for the long term, but really it's very tactical. You're having to decide based on your 4 choices what you're going to do, and you kind of like, okay, maybe I'll work towards this long term, but it might not fall that way. I mean, there was one game where I played where I was like, I'm going to go for the sculptors because like if you get a lot of sculptors, you're going to get a ton of points. But then after the, like, and there were several sculptors at the beginning, but then they just dried up and you didn't see them again for a while because of the shuffle. And so you're like, well, I got to shift strategies here. Like I can't keep waiting for these things to pop up.
I do think it's cool that, yeah, I mean, you are going to have to adapt to what the board is giving you. But I think it's neat that, again, every game is going to be different in that regard. And being able to look at the different cards in front of you and what is available, you can start to develop a different strategy pretty quickly. You're like, okay, well, you know, nobody's taking these. I always call them the dinosaurs, but they're
not dinosaurs.
They're not dinosaurs. They're beasts of the burden.
That's right. They look more like rhinos than anything else.
Yeah, they do look like rhinos. But but yeah, so like, you know, you see nobody's taking the beasts. And so like, man, that's a lot of score because you multiplies upon themselves based on how many you have and how many. Yep. So like, man, I remember a game we were playing. A guy just got all of them. And it's like, okay, well, that's his scoring points. And I didn't get a chance at one. But that's the thing. That's the one thing I will say. You have to react because if you're like, I am going for this at the start of the game, you won't see it. I saw one elder, I grabbed it. I didn't see another one for the rest of the game. It always drew on somebody else's turn. So like you wish you could see those more often, but sometimes it just doesn't happen.
But I do think for the most part of all 6 different types, they all feel relatively balanced in how they score. And so as you're scoring each of them, yes, it is very important that you make sure that one player doesn't just run away with it. Because you can still glean some points from that. But you also want to make sure that they're not just getting to the end of that track and getting a ton of points, which will really wreck everybody else's game.
I think, and we discussed this when we played, all of our scores were very close in all the games. And I think the way this game plays, the way it's designed, and the overall scoring structure, unless somebody just doesn't know what they're doing, I think in general, there's not enough points for somebody to be like, I'm just going to get all of them. There's just not enough space for somebody to just completely run away with it, in my mind. Now, again, it depends on how the card draws, but again, everybody gets to draft a card. So like,
yeah, you're scoring something every round. And I would even say, I don't know how much of it can be that you just don't know what you're doing. Like this game, like there's a lot of good choice in it and you kind of get to make your decisions about what you want to do, but it's not incredibly complex to the point that you can get lost in it and not basically say, I don't know what I'm doing here, or not be able to see the strategy, or to be able to say, oh, well, of course I don't want to have him just run away with all the cards of that type. That would be terrible.
Yeah, and even if he does, that's my caveat against that is like, even if somebody does take a bunch of one thing, that means they're not getting something else.
That's
like,
true.
So that means that you're getting it. So it's like the scoring of one player in a large way is giving another, you know, potentially another player a scoring in a different category in another way.
Right.
So again, that the scoring in this game is incredibly balanced in the way that it all kind of blends together, because it's you can't just have all the cards of one type or all the types. You have to pick. If you pick one, that means that leaving room for somebody else to take another. So,
well, and the game also rewards you for diversifying, both from a you get set collection points for having all six types. The game wants you to build this temple. And so if you're able to diversify and help build the temple, you're going to score points from that as well by the way that you place your ice blocks.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's just so many different ways to score. I think there's a world where you could potentially not even really focusing on clustering your pieces at all. Like, really? You can cluster like two and be totally fine. There's areas where, you know, you only have one or two and you're still scoring.
Yeah.
And so there are a lot of ways to score. Or you could cluster them all together and be totally fine. You're scoring a bunch of points that way. So the variety and obviously randomness of the card draw / tile draw, the combinations are in the millions on a game of this magnitude. Like it's the way everything could fit together is in a million different combinations.
Yeah. And I would say because you have four choices on any given turn, I don't even think card draw really screws you that much. Like, I think it does to a degree if you're looking for one card.
If you're looking for the last, if you're looking for the one to get the set, yeah, I mean, it could ruin you.
I guess, but you know, you're taking that risk though, right? Like that's kind of the risk that you're taking. So I did not feel at all like card draw really played into how the game shook out for me.
Yeah. And I guess if we're going to things that it's that I, you know, that could be lacking in that. If you were looking for something specific and you couldn't find it in a game that I was looking for an elder, couldn't get another one that would have made another set for me, just didn't find it. And we're talking to Mike. I waited for half the game. I was like, the next one I see, I got to get.
Yeah.
Didn't see one for the right. It was a whole half a game. Didn't see another one. So that does happen. Or you just, you know, you're not going to see it. I ended up coming second in that game. I lost by like 2 points. It was off one other play. Like, easily, potentially could have made another move to change. You know, you never know. And so that one thing didn't necessarily ruin me, though. So it would have been nice. But I think there's a lot of other things that you could
do. Like, because the amount of ways you can score, like, there's just no way to quantify what one thing does for you versus what if you'd played the ice blocks differently or what if you'd done that, you know, whatever. Like, there's just so many different things. And the cool thing with that is, like, the game runs 30 to 45 minutes. So like, who cares? Like you can just reset and start again if you want to.
It's quick. And so you can't go wrong there.
Yeah. It's quick. It's light. It's fun to build this temple. I think it's got a nice space that it kind of settles into. I do want to mention that player count is different. So there's a solo mode, a two player mode, a three player mode, and a four player mode. They're all different. So solo plays a certain way, two players. I will say this. So I'm not a fan of bots in games. Like, I'm just not a fan, but I do like the way that the two player version of this game does it, where you essentially split the bot up between the two players and each player has access to three ice blocks, two of yours and one of the bots. And when you have your turn, you can play your block or the bot's block, say that five times fast, but you can't go back to your collection of blocks until you've played the three that are in front of you. So you're still interacting and giving this like extra persons at the table, but you have more control over how it works instead of just this automated play. So I do like that.
That's a little, it adds this strategic element to the bot, where usually the bot just feels like, okay, it's the bot's turn. All right, they went, back to my turn.
Yes, exactly. Whereas this kind of makes you make a decision about what you want to do, which is, I think it's cool.
And I would say, I mean, three player is, I feel like, good, you know, timing. You get to do what you want. Yep. If a card will come back around to you. I don't know about in a four player that happens as frequently. I think it's a little bit more chaotic.
Yeah, and there's some slight adjustments in four player game about how you finish up the temple and all that. But yeah, I think this game sings at three. It's meant to be played at three. I think that's the best player count. Not to say you can't play it at the other levels, but I really like it as a three-player game.
Yeah, I think it's very fun at three.
Yep.
I think it's a good game regardless, but...
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, no, I would agree with all that. Okay, well, Ian, you got anything else, or shall we jump into grading and final thoughts?
Nah, I'm cold. I'm cold.
I got it.
My hands are frozen.
Well, we're almost there, buddy, and you can go warm up by the fire.
Okay, good. Okay, so we're gonna preface this.
Okay.
This game, obviously, if you haven't gotten a clue yet, it's not like the heaviest game we've ever reviewed.
It is not.
It is a very quick, tactical, less than an hour experience that is fun and super light. I never felt any stress while playing this. It was fun. I felt maybe a little like, okay, I want to make the right move here, but overall, like, not super stressful of an experience. It's honestly more very chill and relaxing and fun to chill. But to just one, when you're looking at the cards, again, there's four, you pick one. You put a cube down, and then it's fun to build a three-dimensional piece as a board game. That's one of, I mean, always, I always give games props when they can incorporate a three-dimensional element to them and still have a very good game. I think they did a very, very good job there in incorporating this process. I always love when you have so many different options and paths to victory, which I think this checks all those boxes for sure. With all that, I will say, I enjoyed this experience. I'm going to give this a 7.5. I think this is an excellent game. Not something that I want to play all the time and personally, because I have a lot of games similar to this, but I think this is just another one to add to the collection that is unique. It has this three-dimensional element that I don't think, you know, you're not going to find. There's not a lot of other ones that do it in three-dimensional space, which I think is really cool. So I had a lot of fun with it. Overall, it's not doing anything like crazy mind-blowing, but it's also not a garbage game. This is an excellent game. I really enjoyed this experience, and I had fun. I'm going to give a nice 7.5 to start the year off.
I can jive with that. Honestly, I will say that's higher than I expected.
Okay.
I wasn't sure. I thought you'd be closer to a 7, which is still a good score.
Here's what I'm going to say. The three-dimensional aspect is going to bump up a game 0.5 for me. So...
Okay.
I would say, yeah, 7 would be great, but I think the fact that, like, you literally put the temple top on on the temple when you're done.
Yep.
I mean, just, yeah, go ahead and give me the 0.5 there and make this a 7.5, because I think it's very good.
You know what I'll say? I have not critiqued this game at all, and I will say this one component piece. So the topper is cardboard. I wish so badly that the topper was prettier than the cardboard that it is. Like, it's this crowning moment. It's the end. And you've got all these like pretty plastic ice blocks. Like, give me a nice, pretty topper to go on top.
I think they could. I mean, obviously, it'd have to be a different color. You would want it to make sure it's not blending in with any other blocks.
I get it. We have learned about the cost of board gaming and making board games. So I get it. I do. But it would be nice.
I still think it looks great though, so I won't knock it.
No, it's not a major knock. It's just a I wish kind of thing.
Sure.
With all that said,
that's the deluxe edition, the Kickstarter deluxe, right? At some point.
I don't know that that's coming, but
it'll be like 3-7 times the size. It'll take up the entire
table.
Dude,
can you imagine a giant version of this game?
That would be pretty legit. Actually,
I would be interested. That would be awesome.
It'd be pretty sick.
I'd be all about that. But
to come. Cosmos,
pay attention.
Yeah.
All right. So I think for where this game sits, that 30 to 40 minute range, very light, but still has lots of different choices and scoring options. And for a game that just flows really well and kind of sits in that space, that's how I want to score this game. For me, I don't really have a lot to critique. It really did kind of do what I wanted it to do in this space. And so I'm really pleased with that. And like Ian, I love the 3D aspect. Like I mentioned, I really enjoy that competing shared space where I have to make a decision of, one, how do I not help them more than I help me? And two, how do I get them to help me without them realizing it? And I love games like that because it is such a fun little tug of war and like this game of deception as you're just placing these little ice blocks and collecting your little journeyman. I do like the different set collection of choice of different, like, where do I want to go and how do I make this choice of that's the optimal place to place the ice block, but I want this card, which is in a really not so great spot to place the ice block. So which one do I go with? So I like that give and take there. So for me, I am going to give this game an 8. I think for where it sits, for what I want it to be, it checks a lot of boxes. I wish I had gotten a chance to get this to the table with the girls. I haven't yet, but I look forward to seeing how well they can handle it. I think it's at the high end just because there are so many different scoring options for even Faith, but I think that they are very close, and so I'm excited to see if she can handle it. But yeah, for me, it's an 8. I love adding this one to my collection because I think it definitely has a space for most game nights where it can be a nice icebreaker and a way to start the evening. I just pulled that one out of nowhere.
How chilly of you. I think, no, I'm not going to critique your 8. So I think that's totally acceptable. I think it's a good game. It's very solid.
Very good. Well, thank you to all you listeners out there, whether you're recovering on Wednesday from the Snowmageddon here in Nashville, or you live somewhere else and it's nice and warm. I hope that you have a wonderful week. If you have feedback or want to give us your thoughts on the game, we would love to hear from you. Links to our socials are in the description. If you don't like socials, I get it. Check out our website at thegametablepodcast.com. Shoot us an email at thegametablepodcast@gmail.com. Or find us on BoardGameGeek. All these links are also in the description. 5-star reviews, subscribing in your podcast player of choice, following us on socials, if that's your thing, and joining the conversation on Discord. These heroic actions are immensely helpful in growing this podcast. Special thanks to Angie Santiago for our cover art, to Anna Snyder who made the intro and outro music, and to Alexi Chisolin for the How to Play background music. In the meantime, may your dice rolls and your card draws be blessed, and your experiences at the table be ones to remember forever.
Hello there!
Oh, gosh. That's fun.
Welcome to the ice cold! No. It's cold out there! Do you want to build a snowman?
All right, I'm cutting the recording.